And welcome to the Deep Dive Radio Show. As always, I'm your host, Nick Espinoza, and we're going to be talking about all things cybersecurity, cyber warfare, and technology related. And I think we're one of the only ones out there that's doing that right now. If you'd like to be part of the radio show in any way, shape, or form, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can send us an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. We have an action-packed show as always. There's always a lot to cover, so stick around with us as we deep dive into a topic and we catch up on everything else. So without further ado, let's begin. And this week's show is the election special. This is basically what we're going to be talking about for the entire week. Now, full disclosure, I am still broadcasting socially distanced and safe out of my home and all of that, but I'm actually broadcasting this on Monday, the day before the election. But I promise you, this will be relevant even if you hear it on election day or beyond, because we have quite a bit to cover, including the deep dive, which is 7 security lessons from the 2020 election. Myself, as a cybersecurity professional, are going to walk you through how we can secure the next election better than this election and ensure voter confidence. So stick around. You don't want to miss that. And as always, let's start with a little bit of the news. In Facebook news, Facebook doesn't want you to know you're being politically micro-targeted. And here's what's going on. And this is coming from the Associated Press. Academics, journalists, and First Amendment lawyers are rallying behind New York University researchers in a showdown with Facebook over its demand that they halt collection data showing who is being micro-targeted by political ads on basically what is the world's dominant social media platform, at least here in the United States. Now, the researchers say the disputed tool is vital to understanding how Facebook has been used as a conduit for both disinformation and manipulation. In an October 16th letter to the researchers, Facebook executives demanded they disable a special plugin for Chrome and Firefox browsers used by 6,500 volunteers. Again, these are volunteers across the United States, and to delete the data that they have obtained. Now, the plugin lets researchers see which ads are shown to each volunteer. Facebook lets advertisers tailor ads based on specific demographics that go far beyond race, age, gender, political preference, and on and on and on. As somebody that has occasionally run Facebook ads for like $5 or $10 or whatever, the list of what I can target is rather insane. Now, the executive at Facebook, Allison Hendricks, said the tool violates Facebook rules prohibiting automated bulk collection of data from the site. Her letter threatened, quote-unquote, additional enforcement action if the takedown was not affected by November 30th, meaning that is well past the election, 27 days past. The company spokesperson, Joe Osborne, said in an email statement that Facebook, and I quote, informed NYU months ago that moving forward with a project to scrape people's Facebook information would violate our terms. The company has long claimed that protecting user privacy is its main concern, which I vastly disagree with, though the NYU researchers say their tool is programmed so that the data collected from participating volunteers is anonymous. Again, these are volunteers. This is unlike Cambridge Analytica, which was just scraping the bejesus out of everybody they could get their hands on. Now, the outcry over Facebook's threat was immediate after the Wall Street Journal first reported this news, basically considering the valuable insights that the Ad Observer tool, this is the tool that NYU is using, that it's providing. It has been used since September by local reporters from Wisconsin to Utah to Florida to write about the presidential election. And to quote Ramya Krishnan, who is an attorney with the Knight First Amendment Institute at Columbia University, which is representing the researchers, said, and I quote, that Facebook is trying to shut down a tool crucial to exposing disinformation in the run-up to one of the most consequential elections in U.S. history is alarming. The public has a right to know what political ads are being run and how they are being targeted. Facebook shouldn't be allowed to be the gatekeeper to information necessary to safeguard our democracy. And by virtue of their website, I basically looked at this in late October, and it is packed with really interesting statistics. So here's a few. Since July 1st of 2020, the Trump campaign has spent $87.4 million in Facebook ad targeting. The Joe Biden campaign has spent $68.6 million, and since October 16th, Vice President Biden is actually outspending President Trump. Their targeting methods are somewhat similar, but they're definitely divergent. So both campaigns are targeting basically people 18 to 65 of any gender within the United States. Each are targeting specific locations in swing states, as well as some ads for the entire state. So, for example, the Trump campaign has been micro-targeting Paw Paw, Michigan, Fayetteville, North Carolina, South Haven, Michigan, Duluth, Minnesota, and more. For the Vice President Biden's campaign, they've been targeting Jacksonville, Florida, West Melbourne, Florida, Madison, Wisconsin, Durham, North Carolina, and obviously more. And their keyword tagging by interest is rather interesting too. So the Trump campaign has been targeting, and these are the actual words that they have been targeting, and I quote here, African-American culture, UFC, or Ultimate Fighting Championship, NRA, that's the National Rifle Association, Cabela's, which is a sports shop that sells hunting, camping, all that kind of gear, the Green Bay Packers, gospel music, Duck Dynasty, hip-hop and African music, and on and on. They are obviously targeting the African-American voters in a lot of these states, not to mention their base, gospel music, obviously, all that kind of stuff. Although I do find Green Bay Packers to be an interesting one there. I'm guessing maybe that's Trump country. I'm not sure. Moving on, let's talk about Joe Biden, Vice President Biden's campaign, because they are targeting their own specific demographics as well, such as NPR, National Public Radio. Odds are you're listening to me on an NPR affiliate. Emily's List, Nancy Pelosi, Barack Obama, the Southern Poverty Law Center, Al Franken, former senator of Minnesota that is popular there. Obviously, they want to get that. Bernie Sanders, Oprah, of all people. They're targeting Oprah, Dan Rather, and more. And so I find this to be a really interesting look into how these campaigns are really just trying to target these voters. But I think this is one of those things where I think data collection should be scraped and allowed on Facebook because it's being used for research. It's anonymous. And every single person that is being basically installing this browser or this plugin is a volunteer. Facebook has been in trouble multiple times in the past for basically allowing anybody without any prior knowledge or consent by their users to go ahead and scrape data mine you, target ads on you, all this kind of stuff. I have detailed this ad nauseum for in the last 3 years or so, but this is volunteer. This, you are knowing what is happening to you and you are willingly sharing this information with NYU. That is different. And so I think it should be allowed. I think elections should be transparent anyway, as I will, I'm sure, talk about in my deep dive. But there it is. I'm curious to know what you think about that. But that is your Facebook news of the week. And in Twitter news, Twitter will now pre-bunk fake election news. Now, I think this is really interesting, and I think it's going to go beyond the election as I, again, I'm broadcasting, on Monday initially, so many of you will hear this during or after the election, but here's what's going on. Obviously, we're going through an election right now. We've had 90 plus million, I think it's something like 94 million people pre-vote, meaning early vote in the election. But our big platforms online have also been gearing up in the past couple of weeks for this, what is going to be a contentious election here again, talking to you on Monday, even if you're hearing it afterwards. And so they are looking basically to combat the onslaught of fake news or early declarations of victory while votes are still being counted and on and on and on. But Twitter has decided to take this one step further because they said about a week before the election that they would take the proactive step of alerting users to potential misinformation in preparation for unverified claims about the election. Now, they said they would put notices on the top of users' feeds, warning that there may be delays in election results and that people might see misleading information about things like voting for mail. This pre-bunking is part of an effort to stay ahead of the baseless claims about the election, basically before they occur. And this is according to Twitter's head of site integrity, Yoel Roth. Now, according to Roth, who tweeted, and I quote, "We're introducing pre-bunks for some of the most common misleading claims about the 2020 election. Research shows that getting ahead of misinformation is a powerful way to build resilience. Excited to see this application of inoculation theory in practice. Now, the move is the latest by online platforms aiming at stemming a wave of unverified claims during the campaign, including President Trump's efforts to call into question the legitimacy of mail-in ballots. I've talked about that, on the show, and obviously my deep dive is going to dive into election security in a way that you probably haven't heard about anywhere else, because cybersecurity nerd with a radio show, so that's what I'm going to do. Now, Twitter has previously said that it would remove tweets that encourage violence or call for people to interfere with the election results or the operation of fake polling places. It has also said that candidates for office may not claim an election win before it is quote-unquote authoritatively called, and that premature claims would be labeled with a link to the platform's election page. And so here's the problem. Here's the problem as I see it. So many people have suited up in their red or blue political jerseys, which means a good chunk of the population is going to see Twitter's attempt at rationality to be fake news or censorship or something else. And so my question is, as we go through this election, is this too late to really convince that subset of the population that will basically dig in and say, well, Twitter is just a tool of the XYZ, and therefore they are trying to censor my position when I know XYZ? I think that's a real consideration we have to think about. And so think about that as you are looking at this. But again, make sure that you are going to good sources to get your vote totals. Reputable sources like the Associated Press or Reuters are places where I go to actually look, because as states certify the count, that's what we're going to see. We are probably not going to see at the end of election night a declared winner unless it is so overwhelmingly one candidate or the other that is getting it, like just a blowout. But all polls don't say necessarily it's going to be that, and obviously some states will be naturally contentious. So this is a problem that we're going to see. But just heads up, check for fake news, and if you're on Twitter, they're going to pre-bunk you. And I'd be curious to know what you think about that. But that is your Twitter news of the week.
You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And now for breaches of the week. And if you have a data breach to report that's local to you or the major news might have missed it, please, by all means, send it to me, and I'm glad to give you a shout out and include it in the radio show and possibly a daily video. And you can find me on Twitter and Facebook at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can email questions at securityfanatics.com. Again, that's questions at securityfanatics.com. And I'm more than happy to include your data breach and give you a shout out on the air. With that, let's begin.
And this week's Breaches of the Week is absolutely insane. It is just getting longer and longer out there. But before I begin and dive into those, I'd like to thank the following people that sent me messages, or however it was that they sent me all of this to notify me about it. It's always appreciated. And that would be David Walker, Jason Dance, Barrett Peterson, and Jacqueline Wolf. Thank you so much. And with that, let's just get going, because there's so much to cover in our segment here. Let's first start with Stelco, which apparently is the steel company of Canada. They were targeted with a cyber attack last week. And to quote, Stelco is implementing its backup and recovery plans to fully reestablish its systems as quickly as possible, and some business functions may adversely be affected during the recovery process. That is their news release. They are investigating this incident basically to understand its impact, and I don't know much more about that or much more about it until they say anything, so hopefully they'll get recovered very quickly. Moving on, let's go to Wisconsin and talk about their unemployment system, because some Wisconsinites on unemployment are receiving letters from the state's Department of Workforce Development, which oversees unemployment payments. They said a cyber attack gave a, quote, unknown imposter access to their bank accounts and personal information. Now, the Department of Workforce Development says Wisconsin was one of several states to detect, and I quote,
unauthorized intrusions of state UI data originating from Japan, South Korea, Russia, and inside the United States. A spokesperson says the department believes that the cyber attack or attacks were able to access at least 116 active unemployment accounts. Essentially, it was a credential stuffing attack, and people were seeing money actually withdrawn from their bank accounts because they had given the unemployment system their bank info. Not a good sign. Moving on, let's talk about a company called Harvest Finance, because an attacker stole roughly $24 million worth of cryptocurrency from basically this service, which is a decentralized finance service. And they are essentially a web portal that lets users invest cryptocurrencies and then farm the price variations for small profit yields. Now, this attack took place on October 26th and was almost immediately confirmed by their administrators in messages that they posted to both Twitter and their Discord channel. Now, according to these messages, the attacker invested large quantities of cryptocurrency assets in its service, then used a cryptographic exploit to essentially siphon the platform's funds into their own wallets. That's obviously a major exploit that they've got there. So if you use Harvest Finance, heads up to you. Moving on, let's talk about the Swedish Parliament, or specifically a company that is affecting the Swedish Parliament, because a total of 19 gigabytes of information and around 38,000 files were stolen from security group Gunnebo, by one or more attackers in August. Now, among the leaked documents were details of the security arrangements for the Swedish Parliament and confidential plans of the Swedish tax agency's new office, and just on and on and on. Also, plans for bank vaults in at least two German banks were leaked, while other documents show the alarm systems and surveillance cameras at a branch of the SEB Bank in Sweden were also exposed as well. Now, headquartered in Sweden, Gunnebo is a multinational company with nuclear power plants, hospitals, and airports, not to mention governments and banks, among its international customers. And if they get hit, I think I might be reporting on that one for weeks as everybody starts disclosing. Moving on. Let's talk about the Sky Lakes Medical Center in Klamath Falls, Oregon. And to quote their direct statement, earlier today, Sky Lakes Medical Center was the victim of a ransomware attack. Our computer systems have been compromised. As of right now, we have no evidence that patient information has been compromised. However, communications with the medical center will be a little complicated until we get our systems operating again. Our entire Sky Lakes team is working to counter this attack, and we will keep you updated on the ongoing details of our efforts to return business back to normal. Emergency and urgent care remain available. So hopefully Sky Lakes Medical Center will basically get themselves back online fully. Good luck, guys. Moving on, let's talk about MoTeC or MoTeC Water Management, because more than 100 smart irrigation systems deployed across the globe were installed without changing the factory's default setting, which was no password, therefore leaving them vulnerable to malicious attacks. And this is according to recent security findings from the Israeli security research firm Security Joes. Now, MoTeC's system allows for real-time control and monitoring of irrigation for both agricultural and turf landscaping installations via desktops and mobile phones. Sensor networks allow for flexible and real-time allocation of water and fertilizer to different valves in the system, and therefore, access to this could result in attacker being able to flood fields or over or under deliver fertilizer or water, and that's obviously a very serious issue for agriculture and everything else. Hopefully, those people will start using passwords. Moving on, let's talk about the Enel Group. They are an Italian multinational energy company with more than 61 million customers across 40 countries. They suffered a second wave of ransomware attack this year, and this was the NetWare ransom operator gang, and they are asking for $14 million in ransom for the decryption key. The attackers claim to have stolen several terabytes of data from the company and are threatening to leak them if the ransom is not paid, which is very typical of NetWalker. So heads up, if you are a customer or work for Enel, the Enel Group, the Italian multinational energy group. Moving on, let's talk about SonarQube. If you don't know who they are, they're an open source platform for automated code quality auditing and static analysis to discover bugs and security vulnerabilities in projects using 27 different programming languages. The FBI has issued a flash warning of basically attackers stealing data from U.S. government agencies and enterprise organizations via internet exposed and insecure SonarQube instances. And to quote the report or the alert, Beginning in April of 2020, the FBI observed source code leaks associated with insecure SonarQube instances from U.S. government agencies and private U.S. companies in the technology, finance, retail, food, e-commerce, and manufacturing sectors. So this may be another one that I'm reporting on like crazy. If SonarQube, or rather they don't lock their SonarQube instances down, that's going to be a huge, huge problem. Moving on, let's talk about an undisclosed European government organization. Because according to a report published by Accenture's Cyber Threat Intelligence, Russia-linked cyber espionage group Turla has hacked into systems of an undisclosed European government organization. Now, the Turla APT, or Advanced Persistent Threat Group, is also known as Snake, Uberos, Waterbug, Venomous Bear, and Krypton. They've been active since 2007, targeting diplomatic and government organizations and private businesses in the Middle East, Asia, Europe, North and South America, and former Soviet bloc nations. I find that interesting wording from the article. Now, the list of previously known victims also includes things like the Swiss defense firm RUAG, the United States Department of State, and the U.S. Central Command. The attack against this government parliament in, or government, excuse me, organization in Europe is in line with their espionage motivations in the past, and they typically utilize attacks of things like remote procedure call, backdoors, as well as remote access Trojans, and on and on and on. So hopefully that undisclosed European government organization is going to be able to clear out the attacker and lock themselves down. Moving on, let's talk about Home Depot. This is the hardware superstore here in North America. Multiple reports have emerged from Home Depot customers in Canada stating that the company sent them hundreds of emails containing order information of strangers. Now, users received upwards of 600 order ready for pickup reminder emails and shipment related notifications, each pertaining to a different order. Now, what alarmed hundreds of users was that the orders were not associated with their Home Depot accounts, and therefore it is considered a data leak under Canadian law. We'll see what happens, but heads up if you use Home Depot in the Great White North. Moving on, let's talk about Sonoma Valley Hospital in California, because what they are calling a significant downtime event is essentially their security system got affected. Now, officials are saying they've been able to maintain operations and patient care by essentially leveraging the business continuity plan for the hospital. Good for them. And their IT team is obviously working to restore this. I'm not exactly sure what happened there. Sounds like ransomware, but we don't know. And they're not saying. If I know, I'll let you guys know. Moving on, let's talk about the Wyckoff Heights Medical Center in Brooklyn, as well as the University of Vermont Health Network, who are the latest victims of the Ryuk ransomware gang. This basically comes on the heels of the FBI and DHS's CISA, that's the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, as well as the HHS, the Department of Health and Human Services, issuing a joint alert, basically warning hospitals and medical institutions that we're going to see a wave of ransomware attacks coming out of Russia, and ta-da, here we are. Very big problem. So with that, let's talk about Chatham County, North Carolina, moving on, obviously, from those two hospitals, because they just had a cyber attack that rendered their government network, email, and phone lines inoperable for an undetermined amount of time. And that is according to County Manager Dan LaMontagne, I believe I'm pronouncing that correctly, basically emailing local news. Now, the incident did not affect the county's early voting or 911 communications, and so hopefully they'll get back online. But that is obviously a very serious problem. And with that, let's move on to Aetna, if you recall them. They are a massive insurance carrier here in the United States. This is an update because they had three data breaches within a six-month period in 2017, and now the chickens have come home to roost because they just got a $1 million fine from the U.S. government. Now, Aetna has agreed to pay this fine and to adopt corrective actions to basically settle what they are calling potential violations of the HIPAA compliance rules, and so that's obviously a huge issue. Now, the payment that they're going to pay will go to the Office for Civil Rights and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and so we'll see how they distribute that money. But heads up, if you use Aetna, if you weren't aware, a couple of years ago, they got your data hit. Moving on, let me give you an update on Morgan Stanley. They are agreeing to pay $60 million fines for repeated failures to adequately protect customer data when disposing of old equipment. I actually reported on this a while ago. Now, the U.S. Department of Treasury Office of the Comptroller basically said this week that both Morgan Stanley Bank N.A. and Morgan Stanley Private Bank N.A. failed to take proper precautions to protect customer data when it shut down two of its data centers for its U.S. wealth management operations in 2016. The bank did not maintain an inventory of computer data on those systems, and it did not properly oversee the contractors it hired to make sure the customer data had been wiped from the old equipment. This is apparently according to the order from the Treasury's office. The bank informed affected customers this past July, which is when I reported on it, after it was instructed to do so by the OCC, and it's going to provide 2 years of free credit monitoring and fraud detection services with Experian, which is basically table stakes at this point. So heads up, it's all the more reason why you need a good asset management solution for your business. You might be able to avoid $60 million in fines, because I guarantee you asset management is way cheaper. Moving on, let's talk about 34 million user records stolen from 17 different companies because a threat actor is selling account databases containing this, and it's starting to hit the dark web. Now, on October 28th, a data breach broker basically created a new topic on a hacker forum to sell stolen user databases for 17 companies. This person eventually talked to Bleeping Computer, who told them that they were not responsible for hacking into these companies, and they are simply acting as a broker for the actual attacker. Now, they were also asked how the attacker gained access to the sites, and the seller stated that he wasn't sure if he or she wanted to disclose. Now, the stolen databases are typically first sold in private sales. Those obviously range anywhere from $500 up to maybe $100,000. But after some time, it's common for stolen databases to be released for free on hacker forums and all of that. So we'll see where this goes. But that's obviously a very huge issue for them. And hopefully, none of these companies, and I don't know which ones they are, hopefully they've got themselves locked down. Moving on. Let's talk about the Wisconsin GOP. I actually mentioned them on Saturday's election security news. They had four vendors. Basically, they got hit, and attackers were changing vendors or invoices from four different vendors and were able to rip off $2.3 million from the Wisconsin GOP or the Wisconsin State Republican Party. That was money that they had claimed was going to be going to advertising for the Donald Trump for President campaign. And so we'll see what happens there. But they've obviously got the FBI involved, and that's a huge issue. If you want more information, check out my last video from the day before. Moving on.
And stay tuned. Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show. As we take a quick break for a public service announcement, we'll be back right after that.